Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. On today's program, we go behind the headlines and begin with where the Missouri legislature is right now as the current session winds down. Jason Rosenbaum is standing by in Jefferson City. Jason, before we talk about some of the legislative news, let's talk about some news that's breaking right now. What's going on?
I have some breaking news for everybody who lives in St. Louis City and follows legislative politics closely. State Senator Joe Kevney is planning to resign from the Senate later this year to take a position as an administrative law judge. Before the show, literally seconds before the show started, I was in the governor's office just seeking a confirmation from Press Secretary Scott Holsey for Governor Jay Nixon. He told me the governor will be available at 6:30 to answer all questions, and I plan to get confirmation then. But this is a pretty seismic deal for St. Louis City politics. There will be a committee scramble to replace Kevney. And basically what happens is committee men of the wards and also parts of the county that encompass the 4th senatorial district will choose a Democratic nominee at some point. And that Democratic nominee will almost certainly become the next state senator because the district is heavily Democratic. So don't ever say the last day of session isn't exciting. This is a pretty exciting development for political nerds like me.
Well, thank you for that. We'll get on to some other things in a moment, but Rachel Littman is also with me in studio. Rachel, what do you make of that? You covered the city political scene.
I think it'll set off kind of an interesting, as all these always do, this kind of interesting scramble for the different seats. I would suspect that Lyda Crewson, the current 28th Ward Alderwoman, which is kind of squarely in the middle of Joe Kevney's district, is probably among those names that's going to be considered. She's also been mentioned as a possible mayoral candidate. It's a matter of what she might be more interested in. You'd then have a scramble set off for a 28th Ward Alderman seat. It's, you know, when one domino goes, a lot of other dominoes go. So I wonder how this will shake out in the city level races themselves.
Well, it's job security for political reporters, right, Jason?
Yes. And beyond Lyda Crewson, who I think would be a strong possibility for this, other people that I've actually talked to, Jay Kummel, the House Minority Leader, plans to seek a nomination through the committee. My state representative, Michelle Kratke, is seriously considering it. And other state reps who I think are on the list include Stacey Newman, Gina Mitten, and Carla May. So there may be a lot of people running for this at the committee level, and it will be yet another crazy race to cover during this already interesting election season.
Have you had an opportunity to talk to Kevney at all?
I have, and he actually confirmed it to me personally. He had applied for judgeships in the past, and I think this was something that was of interest to him. This is not like a circuit judgeship per se, but it is still a fairly important position. He told me he plans to officially apply for the position, I think, next week. I think that the governor will then, I think, officially appoint him at some point in the future. Nixon will actually have to confirm to me that this is actually going to occur and that Kevney is not just saying things. But having known Kevney for a long time, he wouldn't tell me this if it wasn't true. So,
And I'd heard from other people who would know that he had gotten an administrative position. So
there wouldn't be this much kind of chatter if it weren't going to happen. Jason, let's talk a little bit about the session. It ends in, 6 hours or so, a little less than 6 hours. What of consequence is still on the table?
Well, a lot of big ticket items actually either passed or failed yesterday. The one thing that I think that is on the table is this multifaceted crime bill, which critics say has a quote-unquote stand-your-ground law attached to it. But it also happens to have an update to the deadly use of force by police officers that's been pushed for a couple of years. It's been seen as a major priority after the shooting death of Michael Brown. So that is still outstanding at this point, and it remains unclear whether it is going to make it out of the Senate because there were several Democrats who filibustered that last night. Other than that, it's sort of just a lot of, I guess, procedural or kind of minor bills that are going through the House right now. Yesterday, they ended up passing a pretty substantial expansion to the municipal court overhaul that passed last year. They also passed a change to the St. Louis County pool tax, which I think if I tried to explain it on the air would probably cause people to be very confused and befuddled. So I'll let people read my articles online. And they're also putting an amendment authorizing photo identification at the polls on the ballot. That should probably be something that'll be up for a vote in November. So yesterday was a busy day, and to top it all off, there was a veto override attempt of what's widely known as paycheck protection or paycheck deception, which involves dues for unions, which actually did not pass because there were not enough votes to override a veto. So
there was some overnight drama with regard to that with Senator Nadal.
Yes. Chappelle Nadal had initially, I think, voted for it. And then on the veto override, she voted no along with two other Republicans. I haven't had a chance to talk with the senator yet. I know that she was the swing vote on that for sure. And there's some context behind that because there has been a pretty out and open public fight between what I would consider labor unions in St. Louis County and the African American community. I think this has been going on for a while, but it's come to a political head right before Michael Brown's shooting death during the very acrimonious Steve Stanger Charlie Dooley race. So there's still a lot of lingering bad blood between those two not necessarily interest groups, but those two sides. And there have been several African American lawmakers who have tended to vote for bills that are seen as antagonistic toward unions, kind of based off that fight. Not everyone has joined that fray, but there is some reasoning for Chappelle Nadal's vote, and it does come from that very public fight that I think we've all been covering for the last few years.
Does her candidacy for the first district congressional seat play into this?
Perhaps. I mean, again, I haven't talked with her specifically, but I would imagine that labor unions were probably going to support Lacey Clay no matter what. And I think that Chappelle Nadal is a very hard worker. She is a very good strategist when it comes to politics and policy. And I think that if she wants to upend Lacey Clay, she's going to have to do it through those strengths and not through the backing of organized labor.
I think there's probably a difference, though, between them supporting Lacey Clay and working deliberately against her, like targeting her. It may be sort of one of those semantics issues, but them saying get out the vote and advertising for him rather than bloodying her up for future runs, giving future opponents ammunition. I wonder if that's plays into it at all.
And there's another thing to keep in mind that if Senator Chappelle Nadal loses, she has two more years in the state Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So labor will have to deal with her whether they like it or not, basically. So, you know, I think that that will definitely be something that will be talked about for a while. And it probably will come up in the campaign for the first congressional district.
Well, here's one for both of you. You mentioned the voter ID constitutional amendment, which will be voted upon later this year. The question is when, in the August primary or in November? And there's certainly a heavy-duty political overtone there, isn't there?
I would imagine that it will be in November because there's probably a larger Democratic turnout that will occur because the presidential election will be up for grabs. But it's up to Governor Nixon about where he wants to put it. Perhaps they can get more attention in the August primary, but it's just a calculation the governor will have to make about whether he thinks that's the best way to defeat it, because I know that the governor is not a fan of photo identification requirements for voting.
You've also got to think that at some point they'll challenge all sorts of things connected to the summary statement, any of the ways that you can challenge before it gets on the ballot, and then, you know, maybe even challenge the language of it itself as saying, you know, you can't put something that is unconstitutional, blocks voting rights, to a vote of the people. Because and Jason, you'll probably be able to correct me if I'm wrong, haven't they had similar voter ID rules tossed out by the courts in the past?
My understanding is they tried to pass a statutory photo ID requirement, and it was thrown out for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons was you would have to change the Missouri Constitution in order for it to become effective, which is why this is a two-tiered process where they're putting a constitutional amendment on the ballot for voters to approve, and then there's a statutory bill that may or may not get vetoed, depending on who you ask, that also was passed. So the statutory change only becomes active when the constitutional amendment goes into effect and is approved by voters. But I would have to imagine that since there's a pretty strong strain of opposition against photo identification requirements, that there probably will be legal action no matter what.
And so, Jason, is what you're saying is that even if this constitutional amendment passes, if Nixon overrides that separate statutory bill setting up the scheme and the whole process, that whatever vote could end up, if they can't muster the votes to do it, could end up being for moot, that it's just sort of some advisory get-out-the-vote referendum, essentially?
To some extent, but even if that statutory change doesn't get overridden, and, you know, a Republican becomes governor, it's not out of the question the legislature comes back in 2017 and passes a statute that gets signed into law. So that constitutional amendment does have some practical value. This is not like the Illinois situation of a couple years ago where they put a minimum wage referendum on the ballot that had no real actual practical consequences. This could have practical consequences even if that statutory change does not survive a veto override.
And that it lays the groundwork for it happening in the future.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to bet that the governor is going to decide to put it on the August primary ballot because there's going to be a much larger conservative vote likely in November.
Well, go ahead, Jason.
It's a possibility, but I'm sure that's something that will be asked of the governor during his 6:30 press conference, along with his feelings about who the next administrative law judge in the state should be.
We have to take a break. Jason and Rachel, stay with us. We'll come back in just a moment, continue our conversation, which will focus on what happened before the Board of Aldermen today, or with the Board of Aldermen, and also what's going on in Jefferson City. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back behind the headlines and back to Jason. Bring me up to speed, Jason, if you would, on this proposed personhood constitutional amendment. Where does that stand at the moment?
It hasn't come up, and I'm not sure it will come up at this point. There's no possible way for it to pass the Senate without a previous question, and I'm not really sure if they're going to use the political capital needed to exert a previous question on that. If I had to be a betting man, I'm thinking it probably won't make it by 6 p.m. today.
Well, that for people who are not familiar with it, it would not only ban abortion, but it would ban some forms of birth control, as I understand it. Well, we'll see what happens with that. Also, I want to get into the opioid database issue. Well, where is that at the moment?
I believe yesterday it came up in the Senate, but Senator Rob Schopp of St. Joseph, who's been a pretty ardent opponent of that idea, stood up, spoke out, and basically killed it. I mean, the reality is that is not going to pass the General Assembly until Schopp either comes up with some particular arrangement with that he's acceptable to, are until he leaves after 2018. I mean, whether you agree or disagree with the issue or not, I think people pretty much agree that Rob Schopp is excellent at blocking legislation, and this is one that he has a real, real philosophical opposition to.
Right. Well, let's bring Rachel into the conversation now because she's been at the Board of Aldermen meeting this morning, and the issue was present there as well.
Well, Don, you hit on some of the headlines, the high points, the highlights of it earlier, is that with the lack of action at the state level, you're starting to see local entities begin to act in developing their prescription drug monitoring programs. St. Louis County, as you mentioned, has already done theirs. St. Louis Cities, which would basically just be work with the county, set up some sort of by region. Thing passed first round approval today. I don't see it having an issue passing the entire thing or getting signed into law. Just basically, you know, get together, figure it out. Let's make it so that at least in the city and the county, they can share information about who's been prescribing opioids, who probably may be looking to doctor shop to find these pills either to sell or to use on their own.
And Missouri, the only state in the country without
a similar... Yes, 49 states, D.C. and Puerto Rico all have statewide databases where you enter prescribers, issuers, enter information about who is receiving opioids, and it allows them to say, we're concerned that you're getting more than you possibly need.
I thought we were the show me state. 49 states have shown us.
Well...
All right. Let's take a call or two relating to parts of our earlier conversation. I'd like to bring in Elliot from St. Louis. He has an interesting thought here. Elliot, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Thank you. It just occurred to me in light of what was the announcement about Senator Kevney. Do you think Mayor Slay might try for that position? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, do you want me to answer that?
Sure,
go
Jeff.
For it, Jason.
If you got an answer, shoot, go for it.
I would think that, I mean, I don't know what Mayor Slay is going to do. Like, he didn't give any indication about what his future could be. He may just be ready to do something else. He may be ready to become ambassador to Lebanon. I don't know. But all I know is that state senator is seen as, while it is a powerful and prestigious position, even in the minority, I would say kind of a step down from being mayor of St. Louis, which is one of the most powerful local offices in the state. So if I had to venture to guess, I'm thinking he's thinking of doing something other than going to the state legislature.
I'm with Jason on this, and simply because he said he would serve out the term. Now, I don't know how it balances out in terms of when the mayoral term ends versus when he would be elected and become the state senator from the 4th district. But if he was serious about staying in office the entire term and accomplishing what he says would be his comprehensive agenda and a controversial agenda, that he'd want to see that through.
I think he said when he announced that he was not going to run again that he was going to stay through the term. I believe he said that.
He said, I will be mayor until April 2017.
Exactly. Let's take a call from Jay, who's calling from Normandy. Jay, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'd like to know the status of a couple bills. The one would be involving the concentrated agriculture, CAFCA, I believe it is. It deals with these terrible industrialized hog farms. Number two, I'd like to know about the status of the state park on the 11 Point River. We need more state parks. I can't believe the legislature wants to defund that. And I guess lastly, I'll switch to the gun issue. I sure hope we can stop the expansion of guns on the Metrolink and on
college campuses.
Yeah. College campuses. What a bad idea that is. So what's the status of those, please?
Jay, are you up to speed on all of those? Jason.
Well, I mentioned the gun-related bill earlier. I have been told that they are trying to attach the state park issue, and by they I mean supporters of, I guess, not making a state park, to a bunch of bills. I'm not really sure of the status of that. And as for the first bill, I honestly don't know the answer to that right now.
Okay, let's move on to some other things, and we'll stay with you in Jefferson City, Jason Rosenbaum. But Rachel, let me turn to you now for what's going on in St. Louis County with regard to Prosecutor Bob McCollum. There is an ongoing attempt, I guess, since the Michael Brown shooting and subsequent events to, I guess, punish, retaliate against Bob McCullough? Is that what's going on now?
It depends on who you ask. I think there'd be his supporters would say, yes, this is retaliation because you disagree with the result of the grand jury. And you'd have his supporters saying, or you'd have his opponents saying that it needs to be investigated for prosecutorial misconduct. What this is there's a group of four activists who are attempting to use a portion of the state law that allows special prosecutors to investigate and determine. It's special prosecutors in the case of a county prosecutor to investigate whether they are eligible to hold the office, whether they've been doing the job of the office. A judge in July, I believe, said, no, we don't believe that a special prosecutor should be appointed in this case. That was what was heard in front of the Court of Appeals earlier this week, was the question of should a special prosecutor look into that? If a special prosecutor is appointed, there would be a whole investigation, and then that individual could issue a special order, what's known as a writ, saying we believe that this individual has not fulfilled the duties of his office. There'd be a whole trial-like process where they would argue evidence for and against and a ruling by a judge. So this is would be the first step in an effort to oust him from office.
It's quite a dance. It's a complicated dance.
It's an incredibly complicated dance.
Well, I wonder, you're a reporter. Do you have any sense as to, given the complications of this thing, whether he's in any trouble?
I don't know. I hate attempting to predict what courts are going to do because they surprise me all the time. I think the question comes down to it's the question that's been argued is how much this group of activists has to prove in order to get this investigation. What they're saying is we're not asking him to be removed. We believe there's enough evidence to at least warrant an investigation into his conduct in front of the grand jury. What the county is arguing for Mr. McCullough is that he did his legal duty as a prosecutor by bringing the case of Darren Wilson to the grand jury. Anything that happened in the grand jury and how it was presented is prosecutorial discretion. It's his decision how to handle this case, and he should not be punished for fulfilling his duty in this manner.
And that's what his supporters are saying. He was doing his job. He did his job.
He did his job. Just because you disagree with the tactics doesn't make it prosecutorial misconduct.
While we're talking about personalities, Jason, back to you with regard to the new police chief in Ferguson. You'd had a chance to talk with Delrish Moss this week. What are your impressions of the new guy?
Well, he certainly knows how to talk to the media because he was a public information officer for the Miami Police Department in Florida. I think that he's taking this new job, and when I say he's taking it personally, I don't mean that as a pejorative. He's taking it personally as in that he saw and witnessed Miami deal with civil unrest to the very similar circumstances that was going on in Ferguson. And I think he sees it as kind of a calling to come in and try to bring together this town that has been torn asunder over the last couple of years by the aftermath of Michael Brown's death. And I know the city manager really likes the fact that he has a communications background as well as just every other thing that he did on the Miami Police Department. He was there for over three decades. And the message about what they're doing in Ferguson is obviously important because there's just so much interest on how that town operates. So I think that's a big part of it. And I think another part of it is just the fact that he's a very experienced police officer with, as I mentioned, three decades of experience. So I think it's a challenge that he is ready to hit the ground running on.
Jason, what did you make of comments that he made that he still has a house in Miami and a pension in Miami? You had a lot of people saying, well, this is just kind of I'm not planning to be here for very long. I'm using this to burnish my credentials of some sort, or that he's not taking the job personally or seriously.
Well, he didn't say that to me. He obviously said that to another reporter. But I imagine that after he got the job in Ferguson, it was not an automatic process for him to buy a house or sell his house. I don't know the details of that, but given how much scrutiny Ferguson as a city government has had over the last couple of years, I imagine that no matter who the city manager eventually chose for this job, there was going to be some way that some people were not going to be happy with the decision. As he mentioned to me, he thinks his greatest strength and greatest weakness is potentially that he's not really that well connected to St. Louis. I think that might be a weakness because he might be wanting to do things that shake up the apple cart, so to speak. But he thinks that's a strength because he may have more latitude to act and do things that may make, you know, the old guard, so to speak, a little uncomfortable. So, you know, he is from out of state, so I think what you mentioned is a reality.
Jason, we only have 30 seconds left, and I just want you quickly to respond. Is he hobbled at all by the consent decree?
I don't know if he's hobbled, but he certainly will be restricted about what he can do because there are very detailed things in the consent decree that the police has to follow.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with us as we went behind the headlines today with Rachel Lippman and Jason Rosenbaum. Thank you all very much. And Jason, you're going to have a busy afternoon, but again, thank you for being with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.